Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably.
Morning! You are listening to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast that looks at everything and goes, oh God! But then goes, oh, okay. Also, this is episode 30! 30 episodes. Bloody blimey. I could wax lyrical about that for a little bit, but I won't. Let's do this thing. This week's guest is Steen Raskopoulos. Steen is a comedian and actor. In 2014, Steen was nominated for Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Fringe for his show I'm Wearing Two Suits Because I Mean Business. And, well, frankly, he's got a lot of other awards under his belt as well. But I could list them all, and it would take a while, so I won't, because I'm lazy. Today we talked to Steen about expectations, the power of talking, and why feelings can actually be a good thing. We make all these podcasts to support Calm, the campaign against living miserably. And if you wanted to... And if you wanted to get some more information about them, or just to check them out, or to even donate some money to them, you can do that by going to www.thecalmzone.net. No dot. And you should, because we love them, they're brilliant, and we love them. Didn't write a third thing for that, so yes, we love them. Anyway, feel free to leave us a little review or a like and subscribe, and whilst you're doing that, here is Lauren and myself talking to Steen Raskopoulos.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. On this week's episode, we are joined by Steen Raskopoulos. Hello.
Hey, thank you so much for getting my name right.
I know.
That really decreases my anxiety.
That's part of the reason I was checking if I had a lisp before, because I was like, that's a lot of S's in one name, to be like, it's Steen Raskopoulos.
Oh, God.
Our first question that we ask everybody is, when was the last time you felt calm?
I feel calm walking my dog, but the last time I felt calm was I went for like a run about a week ago, and that was it's the quickest I've ever run 5Ks, and it happened because I walked down the stairs onto like this Parkland walkway, and there was just this guy, and for some reason he just made me really angry. He was like head to toe wearing like all the latest Nike technology and clothing, and I was like, fuck this guy. And I just, it was my goal to beat him on the run. And then I just kept running quicker and quicker. And by the end of it, I did like 5Ks in 21 minutes and 30 seconds,
Jesus,
which is like, I never run that quick.
Yeah.
But by the time I finished, like, oh, wow, like that was pretty quick.
Yeah.
But it was only spurned on by a guy that I didn't
just
like.
Just rage.
Yeah, and he's probably like a really nice guy and doing his best as well and probably, you know, running for the same reason.
I think rage is probably a good motivator for achieving most of your goals, especially when you've got anxiety. It's like, I will beat this person. Well, I mean, I've never actually successfully done that. But
I get like this in the gym. You know, if there's like a row of treadmills and there's loads of empty ones, but someone will come on the one next to you and I'm like, oh, you want to fucking race? Is that it? You want to? And they've probably just been like, this is the first treadmill I've got to, but I see it as like some personal vendetta. And I'm like, oh, you want to run, do you? You want to run? Well, I don't. So I'm just going to continue walking at a 6.5.
But do you, when you go next to someone or they come next to you, do you check out their speed or their incline?
Yeah, I'm totally like, how fast are they running? How far have they done? Very competitive.
I was just about to say, you're a competitive person.
I've started to run in between series one and series two. A terrible thing has happened and I've started running. I can't believe it.
Yeah, right.
But my sister was like, there'll become a point where you'll get bitten by the bug. And I did my first run and I was like, I never see this happening. By run two, I was like, I want to run everywhere. I've really gotten into it.
Do you find it's good for your mental health?
It is.
Yeah.
And I spent all of series one being like, ugh, fuck running. Oh, all these losers who say running helps their mental health. No. And oh, it's brilliant.
It's so annoying, isn't it?
I feel good on the way back and then I want to eat good when I get in and I'm just like, oh, what have all of these guests done to me?
Yeah.
They've made me run.
Yeah, it's annoying the fact that they are correct about
right.
that one, because exercise is the one that you never want to take seriously, because you can kind of get away with the drink more water, get more sleep, healthy eating and all that sort of stuff. It's the exercise one that you feel like you have to put the most effort into.
Yeah.
And I was the same when I started running. It was just kind of like, I fucking hate this. And I usually do the first 15 minutes whenever I'm running, like, this is miserable. And then when the endorphins kick in, it's actually, oh, this is very pleasant.
Yeah. And I'm actually achieving endorphins.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was because it is a point where like there's a switch, isn't it? And you're like, oh, I'm happy now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what they are, endorphins.
Yeah.
Oh.
What music do you listen to? Do you listen to music?
I put a podcast on.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't do that.
Yeah. Find like a 30-minute podcast and run for 30 minutes.
It's really good.
It's
weird, I have to listen to the horrendous heavy metal music. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm like hardcore hip hop. That's my
like
goal.
Run with a bit of swag.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Well, I think I do, but I'm probably just looking very angry. But I have like the same playlist that I use, and there's always like one track that I finish on, because I know mentally it just flips me into a spot where I'm like, okay, yep, I can finish the last 4 minutes or the last K with this song.
Do you find exercise helps your mental health as well?
100%.
Yeah.
And when I don't, I know that's a big swing when I'm not. And that's hard when you're traveling without, you know, with the job of performing, and you know, you have to really block it out and make an effort to exercise, and not just to stay fit, but also to help your head be fit as well.
Because it can often be that change in routine can be the first sign that something's going a bit wrong, isn't it? That having no motivation to actually do the things that you usually do to keep yourself. Definitely for me, anyway. Speaking from personal experience, it's like I'm not going through a phase of exercising at the moment, but when I was, it's like if I'm not going for a run today, that's because I'm not feeling very well. That's because I don't have the motivation, because I can't be bothered to do all this sort of stuff. And it is one of those turning points. Yeah.
But I think like trusting your body in that sense is good as well.
Yeah.
Like there's some days where, you know, I see a personal trainer once a week, and last week I saw her and I just had one of those things where I was emotionally blocked and I just didn't want to go, but you'd already paid for it, so you have to go. And I was so angry at myself for not being able to do the exercises that I did the week before quite easily.
Yeah.
And even she picked up, was like, are you alright? Like, is everything? And you know, you're like, I'm fine. Just needed a big cry, guys.
Yeah.
And as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, I'm ready to go.
Push ups.
Yeah. When was the first time you realised or kind of found mental health was a thing, be it positive or negative?
I think for me personally, it was in my last year of high school. So I remember sitting in class with Dr. Lyle, who's my modern history teacher, and the bell rang for everyone to leave, like to go to your next class. And I just didn't move. I just felt so sad and I just started crying. And he walked up to me like, is everything okay? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm crying. I don't know why I'm not going to my next class. Mm-hmm. And he took me into his office and we just had a chat for an hour. And, you know, he goes, I never would have picked it. Because at school, I was a prefect, house captain, captain of cricket. So there was this pressure of, you know, hey, this kid goes all right at these things. Mm-hmm. And it was just a thing of, I just struggled and I just didn't know why. And I think there's still points now where I just don't know. Like, I know I'm sad. I feel I'm sad, but mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Mm.
And it is, you know, whether you talk to people or, you know, you exercise and then, you know, there's different ways of unlocking those.
Yeah.
But sometimes, yeah, I don't know how to unlock it until someone says something or something triggers something. I have to go, oh, yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, because that's quite a young age to start having those kind of questions and those emotions and stuff.
Oh,
where
yeah.
did you go after that? What was, did you go and seek help or did you just...
I remember him calling my mum and my mum came to the school. And luckily, we literally lived opposite the school. And when I as in the morning bell was my alarm to wake up to get to school. I genuinely like lived down the road. And I remember my mum came and we just had a chat in his office. But I didn't want to leave school. Like, I didn't want to go home because that was a bit, not, it was a cop out, but I was like, oh, okay, it's good that I've had this chat and I feel better after having this chat. I'll stick around. And then the next time it happened, like I love sport and I used to love playing sport and we were training for football. And I was like, I was in the first football team and we're just going in the warm-ups and it was just like nothing strenuous, just like some sprint warm-ups. And I remember I was like, I can't be here. I can't do this. And I remember I just picked up my bag, just left my boots on, just went and got my school bag and just kept walking. And the coach sprinted after and he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I can't be here. I just got to go home. And he walked me home. And then the same thing, like I just didn't know why.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that place, like sport and being around teammates, and that always was my safe space. It was always my, this is where I get to have fun after school and hang out with my mates.
Yeah.
And it was just this thing of like, fuck, the thing that I loved and the thing that I liked the most was now not a safe space for me to be in. But that's the only time in terms of sport in that instance that it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you go out looking for answers after that of why you were feeling this way?
Not really. I think the school asked me if I'd like to see a counsellor and stuff like that. But, you know, I went to a private all-boys school and, you know, in terms of playing sport, it was very much, you know, in terms of how mental health in Australia, at least in Australia and in the media, it was seen as like, if you're a man, you got to fucking suck it up and get on with it and why are you whinging for? And it was very much that. So for me, it was a sign of weakness, especially I thought I was seen as this, you know, leader figure in terms of in the sporting field or, you know, in a prefect role or like, I can't be that person.
Yeah.
And why am I that person? I'm doing well, like I'm being perceived well by my peers and my teachers. So why, you know, I'm fine, I'll be fine.
Mm.
And I think that was just a constant mantra, like, I'll be fine. Like, it'll just figure itself out. I'll feel better in a bit. And then, you know.
Mm, I was going to ask if you're an achiever at school, because I think achievers do push that down because you're so used to like smashing things and being good at things and being in control of things. And then you're like, these are my feelings. Like, this is what I should be in control of. I'm not. And I think perfectionists at school are the worst for when they start to feel like that, just freaking out, because you're like, my God, this is the, for me, I was the same. I was probably like high flyer achiever at school. It was the first time I'd ever not been in control of something.
Mm.
And I just ignored it. I was like, no, because again, if you admit it, you're like, well, then that's me failing at something. And I'm not, I'm a fail. I'm the girl who comes top of the class and I'm the girl who they count on for everything. And I couldn't comprehend that there was something that I couldn't do and that be just be in control of my own bloody emotions. I think all perfectionists and like overachievers at school end up being so anxious.
Yeah.
So anxious.
But is it a feeling of letting other people down or letting yourself down?
For me, it was other people.
Other people.
Yeah.
It's so weird, isn't it? It's just like you're putting all of the expectations on something. You don't even know that they're going to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of just like burying it all deep down inside. Actually, I'm going to ask you both this question.
Cool.
So what ages were you when you started talking about it, like being open about it? Because if you're at school and you were just pushing it down and down.
2 years ago for me.
2 years.
2 years. So what, I've been 23. That's a while.
Yeah. Mine was last year, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And that's like 30, 31.
Bloody hell.
And that was like doing my show.
Yeah.
That was the first time I spoke openly about my fear healings to anyone. So yeah, that was a very interesting experience to kind of, you know, but it was the only way I felt comfortable talking about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when I'm, you know, I'm doing it in quote marks, like not myself, like a version of myself or
Yeah, because then if people like say something about it, you can be like, haha, That wasn't me.
Yeah,
that was stage me.
Stage me is he's very vulnerable.
You sure really you isn't depressed as well? No, just stage me. Why are you crying, Lauren?
What spurred you to make that jump then, from not talking about it to talking about it on stage?
I hit, like, when I like rock bottom, my whole show was about being not in a very good place. Mm-hmm. And it was my papu, my great-grandfather, who just had a chat with me that day, and he's got dementia, so I've been recording our conversations for 3 years now, kind of thing. And it wasn't until maybe a couple of months after that I just saw the memo on my phone, and I re-listened to it, and I was like, fucking hell, like, I have to do something not only with this, but for me. Mm-hmm. To just, and I think it's that thing of failing, or like, mm-hmm. That's what I was worried about, like failing. And I just thought that, like, this isn't a thing that can be graded in terms of my feelings. Like, and once it's out there, once I've pushed it out there and everyone knows, then I can't go back in, or I can't be that old me of like, oh, I'll just wait and it'll get over it, or things will change. Mm-hmm. It's a thing of, oh, people are conscious, and also I'm conscious of, you know, I suffer from mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I think for me to do that was a massive change in terms of how I live my life now, and my relationships with my friends and my family, and it just opened up this whole world. And what you were saying before about, you know, the pressures of letting people down, a lot of time no one gives a fuck. Yeah. Yeah. And it's this constant pressure you put on yourself. You're like, oh, you didn't care about that, but I've lost sleep over that, or I've been so anxious not to call you or message you about that because I thought you cared, and you didn't know what I was talking about. Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And most of the time people want to listen to you because they care about you and they want you to be okay. It's the pressures we're putting on ourselves that are holding us back. Most people, like our friends, and especially our close friends and family, just go, okay, you're going to be open. Let's talk about this. Like, most of the time, if someone comes to me and they want to talk about stuff, I don't even say anything. It's the moment you start verbalizing it, that's when you can start realizing it's something real. Mm. And you kind of get it out there, you put it into words, you put it in sentences, and the moment you start hearing yourself do it, because when you're listening just to your own brain, you're going to get so paranoid and so wrapped up in it. The moment you start verbalizing it, it makes it slightly more real, slightly more tangible, and you can start then fighting against it. And that's what I've said to quite a few people, is if you do have a friend that's going through something, just listen. You don't need to offer advice. You don't need to save them at all. Like, that's going to be the first big step, is just them having someone to talk to and be open about it. Because who was the first person that you were able to speak to about? Was it just an audience? Because you were quite similar, weren't you? The fact that you started talking about your mental health when you were writing Lady Mark.
Because to me, an audience is baseless. When you're on stage, you can't see people. Mm-hmm. But if you're sat in front of your mum, cam or in front of like a friend, you can see that person and see how they're reacting. And as well, off stage, they can fucking answer back. Can't answer back in an audience. I'm like, well, they could.
They can.
I'd cry. my audiences know not to heckle because I'm too anxious. But yeah, I felt a little bit like on stage, I was like just shouting it into the void a bit. And then suddenly that kind of filters into your real life because people who've seen your show then maybe message you about it or talk to you about it. And you're like, oh, now I'm forced is the wrong word, but now I'm being pushed to have these conversations because I've baffed it all out on stage, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
I found that so much easier than actually sitting down with one person one-on-one and being like, this is how I feel. So see, when it's on stage, you can kind of just be like, haha, that was just trying a thing. Just trying a new hat on.
And was it a thing of like other people saw your show and friends who hadn't seen the show, they were encouraging to go see them? Like I had a lot of friends like, oh, you need to go see this. To see what has happened in the past couple of years.
That's how I went to see your show. People were like, you have to go see Steve. Like, you will really appreciate it and you will really relate to it. And I went to see it and I was like, oh, damn, they were right. Oh, yeah. My boyfriend was like, why are you crying? And I was like, it's comedy. It's comedy.
Because the reception to your show was incredible. Do you have quite a few people coming up to you afterwards, kind of?
Yeah, and I still get messages from people, which is great.
Yeah.
And I open the discussion, you know, and I'm always open for people to message. You do get some very funny messages from people.
I thought you were going to say very intense and then look at me because I sent you a massive message. I was like, I'm sorry.
No, your message is so nice. So you do get like nice messages of, hey, I experienced this as well. And, you know, or my friend has experienced this. Do you have any advice? Or thank you so much. I've taken a friend who has suffered. And like, but then you get some of, I had this one. Her name was like Jill from Brisbane, and she was like, I'm not a doctor, but you've got schizophrenia. It's like, what? That's not what the show's. What are you talking about, Jill from Brisbane? But then you just have to, you know, take it with a grain of salt. And like, okay, thank you, Jill. I don't, but yeah, enjoy the rest of the comedy festival.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, I had someone on Twitter try and tell me I had a brain tumor. Because I was sad some of the times and happy other times. It's like, you've obviously got a brain tumor. It's like, that's not how this works. But now I'm going to worry about that. Thank you very much.
That means like everyone has a brain tumor. Oh, wow. But the one that crushed me the most was my best mate. He's been my best friend since we were 12. And he saw my show, I think, on the last night in Melbourne. And I hadn't told him anything before we went. And when I say, like, I've never seen him cry or be, like, I've never seen this guy cry. And he was a former, like, professional football player. And we've had such an amazing friendship. And as soon as I came out of the show, I couldn't find him anywhere. And he messaged me, like, mate, this is fucking destroyed me. I'm like, this. I need 5 minutes before I come see you. Because then he felt this thing of, I had no idea, why didn't you tell me? Like, and I think that's the hard thing of, in terms of when my family and other friends saw the show, it's like, why didn't you tell me? Like, we could have fixed this together. It's like, that's not how, that's not how it works. And it's hard. And this is my way of telling you now. Yep.
Is there a big difference with like, or is it the same, with how like sort of Australia's approach to mental health and the UK's approach to mental health? Are they different? Are they quite, because we were saying before about it being like, pull your socks up, toughen up.
I think just in general, the world's getting better.
I think
there's more public awareness in Australia, I've noticed. So there's like Are You Okay Day, which I'm not sure if it's a thing over here
I don't think we have that, no.
Yeah. So there's a few public campaigns about that and a lot more. I think with social media, a lot more people are speaking openly about it, whether it be like celebrities or athletes and things like that, which has opened discussions for a lot of other people and for people to, you know, and in terms of like the Calm app and the different apps and things now that can help you. But yeah, I think it's in terms of a worldly thing, I think it's getting way better.
Compared to
when I was at school.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because we didn't have any of this when we were younger.
No.
That's why you had to feel so isolated, because you didn't read about it anywhere. I think the only way I heard about mental health problems was my rock heroes at 27 taking their own lives.
Yeah.
And that's the only time you ever heard about it. But they never used the word mental health problems. They always used, like, just, it was all about drugs and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And it's only been in the last 10 years or so that these conversations have been opened up. And, like, hopefully if there is a young man at the end of high school that's going through these things now, they'll be like, he'll have the information, he'll have resources and stuff like that to go to, but that wasn't around. So that's the big change, is the fact that we can talk about these things. And also it is difficult, like you were saying earlier, that you couldn't speak to your friends or your family about this sort of thing, because I couldn't either. For years I just couldn't couldn't speak to anyone about it. And it was so much easier to do it either through writing, or you have to find your own way of being able to talk about it.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing if you can talk. Like, having open discussions with your friends and stuff is incredible, but I know that not everyone can do it, and it's not for everyone. And it is finding, like, yours is performing, and so is yours, Lauren, but mine was writing. Finding your own way of being able to discuss these issues and then bring them out. Mm. Like, what made you want to put it into the show? Like, what made you think that performing it was the best way?
Because for the past two shows before, I've been hiding it.
Right.
So I'd be doing characters and sketches and using the audience, expressing my feelings. Mm-hmm. And that was the inspiration behind it, where it got to a point where I couldn't hide them anymore.
Yeah.
I couldn't hide without people knowing, oh, that's what happened to his family, or that's what happened to him, or there's only so many horses you can play to disguise different ways of presenting your feelings.
That's what I was going to say. Did you think like sort of sketching character was a good way for you to be able to approach it, because like you can like wrap it up in different like disguises and be like, it's not me.
Yeah.
And you can be a bit more abstract with it and be like, it's not depression, it's a sort of phoenix.
Oh, yeah, very much so. 100%. And then the show before, I had like a Today show, like a Good Morning Britain thing. And like back home, excuse me, they do like a within three rings, if you answer, you can win $100,000, say. But you have to say, like, you know, I wake up with today, and I did this sketch where I played this like really positive, super energetic good morning host. And yeah, the person answers, like, I wake up with today. And it's like, oh, congratulations, you won. It's like, I wake up with today with like the same dark sadness that I've had for. And it was genuinely like, when I wrote that, it was how I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a weird thing to perform every night on stage, because people are laughing at your actual feelings. It's still like a comedic thing and a device that I use, and you know, that was the joke. But it was also, there'd be a couple of times during a run at Edinburgh or Melbourne where you're like, oh fuck, you're laughing at my sadness.
Do you
kind of want to pause the show for a second, don't you, and be like, you know, this is really
They were like, yeah, they wouldn't have a clue. But
no.
Yeah, so there'd be like stuff like that where you could slip and slide in and out of stuff where, yeah, they wouldn't have a clue that it was real.
Do you find comedy is an easier way of conveying it compared to?
I feel like I can tap into it easier as well, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I can put a feeling to a character rather than having that feeling attached to me, the person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So I found that good. And I found like the inspiration behind my emotions and feelings allowed me to explore different characters and sketches and stuff like that.
I like that, because I think that's good, because like it's like it is all these different versions of yourself, isn't it? So by being able to be like, no, but that's not me, that's that part of me and that's that part of me, it's such a good way of like I always struggle with this word.
What's compartmentalizing
it? That's the one. I'm not even gonna it's Monday. Putting it into boxes in your brain.
Oh, compartmentalizing.
But it is, because there are so many different versions of ourselves, especially when you've got mental health issues. And that kind of weird idea of there's the normal version of you, or the like that one version that you think is the okay version. I just don't think that exists. There's just all these different people that just kind of come in. Have you ever seen Split, the movie? Yeah, they're in the light and then kind of like going in and out. Is probably not a good analogy. I'll cut that one from
Oh, Jill from Brisbane, love that one.
Going slightly back as well, you were talking about the fact that like with male mental health, it's still very much seen as a kind of like hunk down, don't feel anything, like man up and all that sort of stuff. Have you had many like men that have seen your show come to you and speak openly?
I think one of the best messages I got was in Melbourne, and it was a dad, and he messaged me maybe 2 hours after I finished, and he said, I just want to let you know that my son and I have come watched your shows for the past 4 years, like this is our fourth time seeing you, and we drove home in silence for 40 minutes, and then he went into his room, I went into my room, and then I came in because I needed to talk to him, and he said it was the most honest, open conversation I've ever had with my son, and we really bonded even further over that, and kind of really made me scared at a particular point that like, fuck, I don't know that side of my son. I don't really talk about that side of my son. I know about his school and his, you know, his friends and stuff, but not him. And we just had this like nice conversation for like the next week of just like constantly just checking in and stuff like that. And you know, I got a few messages like that, which I felt like, hey, that's great,
that's amazing.
And even like with my dad, he's been amazing. amazing since he saw the show. Not that he hasn't been beforehand, but I think it was just like another layer or, you know, thing to our belt that we kind of understood a lot more as well. And he spoke to me about his, you know, growing up with his health, because he was a professional footballer from the age of 15 kind of thing, and travelling the world at that age. And, you know, he didn't have the, like, there wasn't the language in the 70s and stuff like that, or the material or things out there at the time. And, you know, that's where I think a lot of that Aussie, like, come on, mate, you're a battler. You got to, like, go out. You got to be hard, you know. You know, drink some cement and harden up kind of thing. And it's like, no, spit out the cement.
Yeah.
You know, because the phrase I like to use as well is like that thing of, oh, it's just water off a duck's back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, but sometimes that water's fucking boiling. Mm-hmm. So like it does wash off you, but it leaves a burn, a scar. You're still thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? Like you can push it away to move on, but it's still there.
Sometimes you want to be dry.
Yeah. I don't want to swim today.
I'm sick of being soggy.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So if you could go back to Little Steen, the age we kind of give is like the age where you think you would have taken it in and listened to it and given yourself some advice on like mental health and living with a bit less misery, what would you tell yourself?
I think I'd say, like, instead of sort of the phrase like suck it up, I would tell him like to spit it out.
Yeah.
Whether that's, as you were saying, whether it's just like writing in a page just to get it out, to understand why or what you're feeling, or speaking to someone, or just even like listening to someone. There's so many different ways you can I would say like spit it out or allow your feelings to come out. And it could be through exercise, it could be through a myriad of different things, but yeah, that'd be the one that I would tell myself.
I like that.
Nice.
That
lovely
one.
Job.
Yeah.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Hey, thank
cheers.
You so much for having me.
Thank you.
Woohoo.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
30 episodes done! And I think we all deserve a little nap. Yes, I think that's probably a good idea. Thank you to Steen for letting us bother him with our words. Thank you for Dave and Calm. Thank you to Dave and Calm, even, for helping us make this little podcast. And thank you to Lauren, who basically drives this show. And without her, it would just be me being terrible in front of funny people, which nobody wants to listen to. Don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, review, drink some water, have a sleep, eat a vegetable occasionally, give yourself a break, and breathe. Breathing's a good one. And until next week. Bye, 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 bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no. Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew.
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.